Aloha and welcome to a new episode of the Ohana Packers Edition podcast, the podcast where two dudes from halfway around the world talk everything green and gold. I'm Mike, and that's Iowa Joe. And tonight we're previewing the week 15 game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yeah, week 15, because they're about to get their 14th game. Joe, how are you doing tonight?
Well, we're having technical difficulties. I don't know if StreamYard's messing up or if it's the computer. So, but who knows? It's that time of year. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm looking forward to this game or not, especially right after the Monday night game. So,
yeah, it's one of those. Yeah. Hopefully that, you know, like you said, StreamYard is kind of mimicking how the Packers have been the last few weeks. So hopefully they're able to get their act together better than StreamYard is tonight. But we'll forge ahead and, just like the Packers, hope to bounce back a little bit. But this episode is coming out on Friday this week, which means that we are going to have no practice updates for you. The Packers did not practice today, what is today, Wednesday. So they just had an estimation of what their report was going to be. And it's a long one. The big ones is that Eric Stokes was listed as a full participant. Jaden Reed was not listed with a concussion, but with an ankle injury. And they did have five would-be DNPs: A.J. Dillon, Darnell Savage, Quay Walker, Christian Watson, and Dontavian Wicks, who, based on what they were saying in the postgame, he may go on IR at this point because they said it sounded like a pretty nasty high ankle sprain. But we're back to being the walking wounded. I know that most of the guys were able to pull through and play last week, but Joe, it looks like the Packers are going to be banged up against a tough defensive opponent in the Bucs this weekend.
Well, and I think they're being, since this is just a estimate, they're being awful conservative with it. So, and some of the things on there were a little bit weird. Like, we knew that Dillon had a groin issue going into the game, and now he's listed with like a thumb issue. And Reed was concussion, and he had been dealing with a chest injury, and now it's an ankle thing listed on the report. So I'm not saying the Packers are doing screwy stuff. I just you can tell that they're being ultra conservative with their estimation, with the estimations for practice.
Yep. And especially like you kind of noted, they're always conservative. Plus they're coming off the short week as opposed to the Bucs, who have a full week of practice. So they'll probably play it close to the vest, and we'll try to tweet out some updates as the week goes along. But yep, it looks like the Packers are likely to be shorthanded in some regard come Sunday, but no, there's no time to cry over spilt milk or anything like that. They face off against the NFC South leading Tampa Bay Bucs, and I know that, you know, the overarching theme for the Packers is growth, you know, seeing development from their young players, particularly Jordan Love. But this is an important game for their, you know, their fledgling playoff chances, especially after dropping a dud against the Giants on Monday night. The Packers are 6-7 and the Bucs are 6-7 and lead the division, but they are tied atop that division with the Saints and the Falcons all at 6-7. So this is a big one for the Packers in terms of playoff pecking order, but going into it, you know, the Bucs team, they're bottom third team in the league by the advanced statistics, second overall by DVOA, 21st on offense, 17th on defense. They are, you know, just showing how inconsistent they are. They're 3-4 on the road. They have won their last two games, but they do have a negative 8-point differential, which shows like they are the definition of they are what their record says they are at this point. And most of that is due to their offense being relatively shaky. You know, they're gone is the GOAT, Tom Brady, and in his place has been Baker Mayfield, who, you know, he's had a solid season, but it, you know, the underlying metrics haven't been as good as, you know, his counting stats looked like. So, you know, he's just at about 3,000 yards and he's got 20 touchdowns with just 8 interceptions. But this offense doesn't seem to be the dynamic, explosive squad it was, you know, when the Bucs were winning their Super Bowl and just kind of threatening to get back to the NFC Championship game each year. So you know, the biggest changes is they've gutted their running back room, along with obviously moving on from Brady. So Rashad White, who I believe they drafted 2 or 3 years ago, he's their lead running back. He has, you know, 700, he's on pace to get 1,000 yards, but he's only averaging 3.6 yards per carry. And then the two big names to watch on offense are Mike Evans, who has already crossed 1,000 yards, and Chris Godwin, who has bounced back. You know, he's having a solid return from his ACL, MCL tear last season. But anything that sticks out to you other than those names, or how much those names should worry the Packers, Joe, for you off the bat?
Tristan Wirfs.
He is the...
Yeah, he's their the star lineman they have, but, you know, also Iowa alum, so, you know, I got to give him a shout-out.
Oh, no, he's been as good as I expected him to be, so, yeah, he is definitely as good as he has built to be as an offensive tackle.
Otherwise, I couldn't really tell you off the top of my head what their other options are. I think they drafted our guy, Mock, from North Dakota State, the offensive lineman. Nick and I were pretty high on him going into the draft. I think they did. I'd have to look at the roster.
I think you're right. Yeah.
But really on the offense, I know it's going to be rough no matter what, just because after what the Packers just did against the Giants and Tommy DeVito, Baker's got more experience. So if DeVito and Baker can move around like DeVito can, so if Tommy DeVito can do that against the Packers, what's Baker Mayfield going to do with two options at wide receiver that are way better than whatever the Giants can throw out there? So I'm not as confident as this game as I would have been a couple weeks ago. And I don't know. Like I said, I'm still riding it. I never thought this year was going to be the year that they were going to turn everything around, because it was a guess year on everything. So we'll just see what happens.
Yeah. And like we said, Wirfs is probably their best player. You know, it's a coin flip between him and Evans is who is the best at their respective position. But Wirfs has been nothing but an all-pro since he entered the NFL in the 2020 draft. He was a big reason why they were able to win the Super Bowl, because he just completely shored up their right side of their O-line for them. So he's going to be a big test for the Packers, because, you know, edge pressure has been their thing. And, you know, we saw that group coming on strong, and then, you know, they had a rough game on Monday night where nobody... You know, we talked about it a lot in the review, but nobody seemed to have discipline in terms of containing the pocket. And like you said, Joe, Baker is a very similar quarterback to DeVito in terms of where he kind of likes to play on secondary action, secondary reaction plays. So, you know, it's going to be on the Packers front to be much more disciplined come Sunday afternoon, as opposed to what they did on Monday night. But yeah, like whether it's the advanced stats or the standard counting stats, the Bucs are right around the low 20s in terms of their points per game, yardage per game. This isn't an especially explosive offense. You know, Evan, like I said, outside of Evans, who is averaging 16.5 yards per reception, their running backs are all averaging under 4 yards a carry. And they're like Godwin is, you know, he's a good wide receiver too, but he's only getting 11 yards a catch. So not an especially explosive offense, but it's kind of like we joke about every week is like, which way will Barry choose to die on defense? And basically knowing that Evans and Godwin are out there, I think that it's pretty easy to guess which way he's going to go on that one.
Well, and like we said before the Giants game, the Packers seem to play down to their opponents. So I think I would feel, and this is weird to say, but I think I would feel more confident in this game if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were, you know, like top 10 in all their advanced stats, because then I know at least the Packers would play up to those, you know, those that type of team. Whereas now with the, you know, with, like you said, their DVOAs are, you know, bottom tier, Packers could end up playing down to that. And I know a lot of it's going to be based on who can go, just based on injuries. And we'll talk about the defense here in a second, but you know, that's going to be the key to everything, is what is the defense going to be able to do? If Jair plays, you know, I would feel maybe a little bit more confident. If Stokes plays, I would maybe feel a little bit more confident, because then I would look to put Stokes and Jair out there as our boundaries, and maybe move Carrington in, or maybe even Ballantyne, even though Ballantyne really had a rough game last week or this past week. But I maybe move Carrington in at nickel, and then you don't have to rely on Keyshawn. Even though I really hope that Keyshawn comes back and makes up for this last game, where he even admitted it himself that he played like shit. So I don't know. I just, a lot of ifs. That's all I can say, is a lot of ifs.
A lot of ifs on how guys are going to play. But I think we're both on the same page that we're not expecting much, you know, unless Jair and Stokes are back. We're not expecting much different in terms of how they're going to line up and play it, kind of thing. And it's just a matter of, are the outcome, basically, that's the thing with Barry, is like, what is the outcome going to be? Because we know what the setup is generally going to be. We know who the players are going to be based on the injury report. And it's just a matter of, are you going to get, like we said, who's going to have a resurgent, you know, like just absolutely out of their dome game to make this defense look a lot better than it really is, kind of thing. So, yeah. Like you said, that remains to be seen, and that's sort of the Russian roulette with this Packers defense under Joe Barry, is it's someone's got to be playing out of their dome for this defense to look good. But like we said, I don't think there's too much more to be said about this Tampa offense. They kind of get discombobulated in the middle of games, and then, like I said, they have the skill position players out wide to just turn the tide if you leave the door open for them. So, like you said, Joe, they're the Packers' best defense, as it is with every Barry defense, but their best defense is going to be scoring, which is going to be paddling upstream for them this week, because not only are they dealing with a multitude of injuries across their skill positions, but the Bucs do bring still a talented defense. I know that their metrics and their yards per game aren't great, but this is still a defense that can just put the clamps down on more limited offenses. And if LaFleur is going to employ the same, you know, line of scrimmage heavy and centric game plan, I don't think that's going to work out really well. Cause I mean, he tried to do that with Rodgers and, you know, a more experienced receiving core, and it just didn't work well. So, you know, that's going to be the big thing, is this Bucs team still is reliant on a lot of man coverage. And their key player is Antoine Winfield Jr., who leads them in tackles, interceptions, and passes defense, and just really just hunts on the back end of their defense and is a ball hawk in every sense of the word. But so Jordan's going to have a much better game. And I saw Dusty Evely posting some videos, and you mentioned how Wayne and Larry were kind of mentioning that, you know, the wind was a bigger factor than a lot of people realize. And Dusty posted one where Love broke the pocket and is rolling to his right, and you can see the ball get blown 5 yards back in towards the middle of the field. So hopefully, you know, Love will not have to battle that many elements, and they'll be able to get a more appropriate game plan in effect this week to attack this Bucs defense.
And that could have been why Anders missed the kick too.
Yeah, like I said, Anders, it was more Anders than anything that I was kind of keyed in that there was some kind of wind, because like I said, Mason would do it all the time when there was wind, where he would do that, he would kick the ball low and it would look ugly, but he was just trying to knuckle it through the wind, kind of thing. And the problem with
reason I say this is because I've been hearing everybody all week, you know, wanting to blame Anders for stuff, and oh, well, you know, he's still not very good, and we can't trust him in this, and we can't trust him with that. The kid has been beating expectations.
Oh, yeah.
This is absolutely a kid that nobody figured was going to be able to make a friggin' field goal to save his life. And I'm ecstatic for 80% right now, because we all, everybody, I even said the same thing. We're looking at maybe a 60% kicker.
And he didn't miss a chip shot. He missed, like, I know that you want your kicker to be, but it's not like he missed something from the 30s. He missed a 45-yarder in what looked like just a soup bowl of a wind stream in the Meadowlands on Monday night. So, yeah, like I said, you would like him to, you know, you would like to see him persevere. But honestly, I thought, you know, he kicked, what was it, a 48-yarder or something like that. He had some other long kicks in that game. So, like you said, he was dealing with the elements. And, yeah, I think, you know, his recent struggles are magnified because the team is, you know, on the cusp of playoff contention and all that kind of stuff. And so every point is so valuable at this point in the season. But in all reality, score touchdowns. Like, there's only so many kickers in this league who fans of their team should be, I don't want to say happy, but comfortable with them kicking field goals. And even Justin Tucker has missed some kicks this season. So, like, and that's the standard of standards for NFL kickers at this point in time. Still, yeah, I don't think we even bagged on him that bad in our post game one, honestly. But I really, after looking back on it and seeing some of the shots of some of Love's throws on Monday night, I don't blame him too much. You know, would I liked him to make it? Of course I would have, but that's one of those, you can't simulate that. Like, there's no way to simulate that kind of wind and having to kick in that kind of condition. Cause even if you're training to do it, you're kicking it out the wind. So it's like, okay, I know what to do, but if you don't actually have to account for the wind still, it's like, all right, we're like kicking for the hell of it kind of thing. So
win yeah, some, like lose I said, some. I've been hearing and seeing on Twitter and all this stuff, just, you know, raging against him. And it's like, guys, you know, a kicker is going to miss a kick.
Yeah.
I mean, how many games did we have with Mason where he missed multiple kicks?
And I've seen a lot of posts that are like, even with the recent struggles, this would still be a top third of his career season for Crosby if this was like, if you just put Crosby's picture on Carlson's stat line this season. So,
yeah, I don't think Mason, I think maybe two or three seasons Mason had over 90%.
Yeah, the one of them was 2020 when he was perfect kind of thing. So, yeah, like it was more of a, he just kicked a lot. And it's not like Anders is missing in domes, he's missing outdoors. So,
yeah.
These kind of things are going to happen,
but, and he's not letting it bother him. He's
no making you're right.
He's missing a kick, and then he's coming back and making extra points and kicks and all that other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like you said, I don't have too many complaints. That I don't understand what they're doing on some kickoffs, but it, I guess, like with the wind kind of that's come up in when you watch the All 22. I guess that they were kind of just thinking like, let's just knuckleball it and see what happens. But yeah, in terms of, like you said,
you said something a couple weeks ago that's been sticking in my mind, and you saw it more with this game, is it makes you wonder if they're trying to get the other team to call the fair catches.
Yeah.
Instead of just kicking it out, just, you know, taking their chance on making them call fair catches.
Yeah. And it's a weird catch 22, because on one hand you're kind of like, oh, like of course everyone's gonna take the fair catch because they, you know, they changed the NFL adopted the college rule this year. But if you do it right, you know, you kick it, it's hard to like really deserve, but you kick it with the right angle so you have the, like, you have as much hang time for your coverage team to get down there, but not so much that, you know, it's not like a pitching wedge where the guy's like, well, that thing's up in the moon, so I'm calling fair catch kind of thing. So you're like baiting the returner into thinking I can do something with this, you know? And so, yeah, so it really, and especially with the wind, it looks like it's something that they are kind of messing around with in putting into practice. So, but yeah, the most interesting thing about this Bucks defense, I think, is, you know, when we played them in 2020 for the NFC championship, you know, they had Jason Pierre-Paul and Shaq Barrett. You know, I think the two of them had like 25 to 30 sacks between them and stuff. This rendition of the Bucks front, they don't have that, but they do have six guys with four or more sacks, which just means that they just have a bunch of dudes who get pressure on the quarterback. So, and those guys are like front seven guys. It's not like one of them's their safety or anything like that. So I apologize. One of them is Winfield, but you know, he's kind of a, they do use him sort of like a Polamalu style type safety, where he's going to play at the line of scrimmage, play him deep. He's going to do some man coverage, and they're just going to, it's a Where's Waldo effect with him. And the other guys to highlight, Vita Vea is having another really good season. He's actually the one who leads them in sacks with 5.5. And it's going to be on the interior O-line to move him to get some movement in the run game. And outside of that, you know, and then everyone remembers in 2020 the headaches that Devin White and Lavonte David gave the Packers. So, you know, Devin White, some of his luster has rubbed, you know, has worn off. You know, everyone realizes he is mostly an athlete, but even Bucks fans and reporters are kind of like, does he know what he's looking at half the time? And unfortunately for him and the Bucks, you know, White hasn't really picked up the thinking side of the game as Lavonte David, who has always been the better of the two linebackers, as he's started to lose a step or two to Father Time. So David is still a dangerous player because he's still just so crafty and smart on the middle of the field. But, you know, this is a game where it's a bummer that Musgrave is hurt, because you would like to see the Packers get to send him up the seam against those two. But hopefully, you know, you can get some opportunities for Kraft in the middle of the field this game. And if you do some high-low work, you can get Reed some catches in the middle of the field as well. But that's, you know, that's the trap that LaFleur fell into when they played in the regular season in 2020. Is that, you know, he tried to do everything quick hitter, everything was a short, and it really just let Tampa squeeze down on the line of scrimmage. Whereas the championship game, they had more success when they were, you know, they got MVS for the 50-yard touchdown, and they started to like kind of stretch the intermediate portions of the field. And even in the week three game last year, you know, you saw them attack with strike and some intermediate concepts like that and drive. So they've got to, you know, as much as the Bucks are an aggressive defense and they like to man up and stuff, you've got to stress their coverage vertically, because, and that's where you've got to be able to pass protect. Because if you can pass protect, you can put their cornerbacks are on islands. And if you run man beater crossing concepts, you know, you can generate yardage on them.
Right. And, you know, their secondary is not that much of a slouch either. You got Carlton Davis and Jamel Dean, and then like you've been talking about, Winfield.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're gonna have to be able to do something.
Yeah.
Whether it's get the run game going, get some, you know, some screens going. This would probably be more of the game than last Monday nights to do more of your jet sweeps and stuff like that, but not continuously do them. So I don't, this defense is going to be rough. I mean, they've got guys up and down the line that are just going to cause trouble. I know the numbers aren't all there, but they're still productive guys. And, you know, Logan Hall, Khalijah Kansi. Oh, I was just looking at a bunch of them. You know, Golston, Logan Hall. I just said Logan Hall, but...
Yeah,
Nelson, Anthony Nelson, and
Tryon Shoyunka, like, yeah.
Guys like that are just going to cause nothing but havoc, especially when one of our weaknesses so far has been a consistent offensive line play. I don't know how many times we've got to say it, but let's stop with the rotations, pick a starting five, and just go for it. If the guys you don't pick are not doing anything, then you can rotate in one of your other guys. But you want to stick with a hot hand. If that means sitting John Runyon, sit John Runyon. If that means sitting Rasheed Walker, sit Rasheed Walker. But you got to do something. You can't just keep rotating and say, ah, well, something will fix, you know, it'll fix itself.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree. Because, and Mike Wall has been saying it on his On My Block show that, you know, he really wishes they would just pick and, like you said, just pick and stick with it. You know, he's very adamant that Runyon is having a much better season than a lot of fans are giving him credit for. But, you know, his whole thing is like, just stick with something, like make a decision and stick with it at this point. If you want to go young, go young. If you want to get, you know, if you want to err on the side of experience for to, you know, give Love the best picture, then do that. But don't go, you know, don't try to straddle the, you know, pun intended, don't straddle the line, make a decision and live with it. And like you said, if it bombs, then you got have the guys to swap in, but swap them, don't rotate them at that point. So, because yeah, why was the Packers offense doing so well, you know, in the month leading up to the Giants game? The O-line was an A-plus unit overall. You know, yeah, that, you know, everyone was belly aching over Myers having his one like horrible play per game, or Runyon Jr. like getting lost on a couple plays here and there, but overall they were kicking butt and taking names in the games leading up to it. And we kind of like we highlighted it on the review where a guy here, and it was back to October football for the Packers, where every play one guy kind of was like a little bit off or a little lost or didn't have the best rep. And you just can't do that on a consistent basis against any opponent in this league. So like you said, hopefully the pressure of the, you know, bouncing back off the short week, the fact that, yeah, the Bucs are only 6-7, but they are leading their division, that sort of, you know, that mental mindset is going to be enough to get this Packers team to, you know, wake up and take this opponent more seriously. Because like you said earlier, when this team decides that an opponent is quote unquote worthy of their best effort, they do put their best effort out there. So I think it helps that the game is at Lambeau, but it's time for the Packers to bounce back. And it won't be an easy week at all, but these are the kind of things that we want to see, how, you know, especially Love, how he's going to bounce back from his worst game in a month. So anything else specifically on the Bucs from you, Joe?
I think it sucks that they've got so many Iowa guys on their team.
I know, that is a bummer.
But again, I'm just here for the ride, because if they were a little bit more, if the stats were a little bit better and they were ranked a little bit higher, I would feel much better, like I said earlier, just because knowing that they're not a top-notch team, the Packers are going to play down to them. Now, I do hope that they'll take the Giants game to heart and just come out and firing on all cylinders, but I just don't have a lot of confidence in that. Now, I do have to say, and this will go into a little bit of our last segment stuff, but Baker's played against the Packers the last 2 years and has 8 total interceptions. So I'm kind of 50-50. He's either going to have a really good game and it's one of these shove it down your throat type games where he's going to make up for those 8 interceptions, or he's going to exit Lambeau with 12 interceptions in 3 games in 3 years.
Yeah. Baker, you know, he was a lot of fun to watch in college, and, you know, he's had his moments as a pro, but he really is one of those. It is in the era of Jay's going to throw you the ball and you got to catch it when it comes to, he's that kind of quarterback. So big game for, like I said, big game for the Packers front. You got to get pressure on him, but you got to get controlled pressure. You can't have the kind of just irresponsible, undisciplined play that you had on Monday night that really just injected a lot of life into the Giants offense, because they just made it way too easy on DeVito, both throwing and running the ball. So they've got to get that squared away. But like we said, it's more about what Green Bay is going to do and what they're going to be able to do on Sunday. And my big thing is, no matter who's out to play for Green Bay, I hope LaFleur doesn't over-turtle the playbook because he's missing a Watson and a Wicks and, you know, and Reed is limited. Like, I hope he doesn't just turtle into the playbook and kind of say, like, well, I wanted to do all these things, but, you know, and I'm not saying that, like, you go, like, deep on every play or anything like that, but you can't tie an extra, like, limb behind your back just because you're like, I don't have my true deep threat and I don't have my secondary deep threats in Musgrave or Reed either. So we need LaFleur to bounce back as well after, you know, he also had a dud, I thought, on Monday night after having just a really strong string of play calling the past month. So big bounce back opportunity for all parties involved. But let's get into our yes or no's for the week. And I came up with the first one. You got the second one. Yes or no, Joe? Jordan Love bouncing back with a clean game on Sunday.
I hope so. But the sad thing is outside of a couple of things, I don't think he was that horrid from Monday night. He just didn't look like the same quarterback from the previous 3 weeks. So it made it look worse than what it was.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he threw the interception. Yeah, you know, he had the fumble. But like you said, and like I had pointed out that Wayne and Larry had said, and like Dusty was kind of going through Twitter today, the wind was kind of a factor in some of that stuff. Was it the factor for all of it? No, but it was the factor for some of it. So I'm going to say, yeah, he's going to have a... Now, what? Let me ask, what do you consider a clean game? Are you considering like
no turnovers? No turnovers. Yeah. Clean being no turnovers. Yeah.
Then I'm going to say no, because I think he's still going to give up at least one, especially considering how banged up the wide receiver room is, that I think there's going to be at least one interception.
Love might have to go into superhero mode a little bit and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I see it. I'm going to say no, because I'm hoping that LaFleur isn't going to play into what the Bucs want him to do in terms of, like I said, being overly conservative with the limited weapons. So I'm going to go with a hopeful no there. But I know my head's telling me, like, it just because of what the Bucs like to do and how limited, you know, Green Bay might be down to its wide receiver 7 and 8 this game. You know, they might call up both DeBose and Melton this week just because of how, like I said, you know, they probably are down Watson again. They probably are down Wicks based on what they were saying in the post game. And Reed, you know, he said he thinks he's going to go, but how limited is he? So that remains to be seen what they'll do at wide receiver this week. And your second one, Eric Stokes, activated or not activated this week?
Well, I was really surprised that even though this was an estimation that they had him listed as a full participant, I think it's already been a week since they designated him to return. So I'm pretty sure he'll be activated. Now, how much he's going to play, I don't know, but I do think that they'll, because I think the whole thing was that it wasn't a horrible hamstring tweak. I fully believe that they just wanted to give him, you know, instead of rushing him out there again and tweaking it a second time, they just said, all right, you know, we've already done it once, you know, just relax, do what you got to do. Well, not relax, but, you know, work on what you got to work on. But, you know, we're not going to take any more chances, make it worse or anything. So we're going to sit you for the 4 weeks and then come back. So I fully think that, yeah, he'll play.
Yeah, I think so too. And actually, so we're going by the true 21 days. Next week, Monday, is the 21st day, is when they would have to make the drop dead for is he back or is he not. So I get the feeling that he's probably I do think he's like 95% likely to play. And the probable way he gets back on the active roster is, I think, Wicks goes on IR, because the way that they're making his high ankle sound. Yeah. Oh, they still have one spot? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they released Caillou, and they haven't brought anybody up.
That's right.
So I figured that's what. That was the other omen that I have a feeling that either Stokes is back or Jair plays, is that they release Caillou.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point. I forgot about that. So yeah, no moves needed at this point, but on to your over unders, Joe. What do you got for us this week?
Well, I've already touched on this one a little bit, so it's more of a, you know, see what happens type thing. But Baker, 2.5 interceptions.
I'm going to say no, because I am so down on Barry's defense right now. And not knowing what Jair and Stokes' status is going to be. And even if Stokes is back, he's not a ball hawk. Like, that was always one of the dings on his game, is he has bad hands and he kind of has bad instincts to look for the ball. So I'm going to say no. Under 2.5 interceptions.
I would just find it hilarious, so I'm going to say yes. That it doesn't matter what team he's on, what year it is, he's still going to come into Lambeau and throw 4 interceptions. So I'm just going to go yes with it. 2.5 sacks for the defense. You know, they just got shut out. I believe, and I could be wrong, but I think I heard this, that, okay, so the Giants were said to have given up 69 sacks going into Monday night's game. I believe this is what I heard, that Tampa just gave up 69 sacks so far this year. So do they get shut out 2 times in a week? Or I mean 2 times.
Yeah, I mean technically it is 2 times in a week. It's 6 days apart. So
but I mean, do they get 2 times in a row shut out against teams that are giving up tons of sacks? So 2.5 sacks defense.
I think they're gonna get 2, so I'm gonna say under.
I'm just gonna go over. It just to make for content, go over. I think Van Ness was so close at getting one Monday. Rashawn's going to have some kind of comeback game. I don't see him getting shut out completely. But Baker, even though Baker has the ability to roll out and get going, he's still not really a speedster.
And he does run into a lot of sacks too. Yeah.
Yeah. And on top of that, he is more of a veteran type, where his first instinct isn't to run, it's to stay in the pocket and throw. And I could see that happening with, you know, with as well as the D linemen we're playing against the Giants. I could see that if they carry over to this game, that it could become a problem.
Yeah. Like I said, it's a matter of just being like just a couple ticks more disciplined, because they're, like you said, they were winning a lot of reps and then they lost it when they got past their man kind of thing. Just a little bit too much excitement, a little too much lack of discipline. Combine the two and you have, you know, you all 5 guys on the rush beat their blocks, but they all end up on the ground and DeVito is running for yards kind of thing. So got to be better at lane integrity on defense. And then what's your last one for this week?
Heath, 50.5 yards. He's my dude. I just got to go with it. And I think Love is going to try to get Heath involved more, especially considering Wicks is probably going to be, or is most definitely out. We don't know if Watson's playing. Dobbs is a little bit banged up. Jaden's a little bit banged up. The only other option right now is Toure, and we all know how much Mike loves Toure. And so they definitely have to bring somebody up from the practice squad for this week, just because they need bodies at the moment. So it's either going to be Bo Melton, which I think we're getting, what is this? This would be either 2 or 3 for him.
Yeah.
And then the only other one is DeBose, and I don't know what he's looking like at practice right now. Yeah. I mean, we all knew he was raw coming in, and I just don't know if he's ready yet or not. But so 50.5 yards for Malik Heath.
I'm going to go under, and only because if the Packers play offense like I think they should this week, I think it's going to be kind of like the Kansas City and the Lions game where, yeah, someone's going to have the chance to go for like 80 or more yards, but I think we're going to see like 8 to 10 guys catch a pass this week. And just because they're going to spread the, they're going to spread the ball around a lot. I don't know if Heat's going to get enough touches to get 51 yards this week. So only for that reason, just because they do prefer to rotate guys a lot at the receiver position.
I think I'm just going to go over because just because you take the over doesn't mean he's going to be going for 80. So, yeah. You know, going 50 and a half gives you a little leeway where he could go for like five catches for 60 yards or whatever it is. So I'm going to go over because, like I said, we don't know what Watson's availability is going to be. We know Wicks is out. We're confident Jaden is going to play.
Yeah. But,
you know, they're going to need somebody to step up. And the only two other than your guy, Torre, right now are Dobbs and Heath. And then whoever they decide to bring up from the practice squad. I don't think it's going to be the new guy that they just signed on, because that would be super quick. So it's either got to be Melton or DeBose or maybe even both. Who knows?
Yeah. So I think that guy is more there, like you said, because Melton's almost out of call-ups this year. So,
well, and,
it's not like he's a it's not like he's a Kenyon Drake either. He's not a guy who's like been around the block kind of thing and stuff. So I would be shocked if he jumped ahead of either Melton, who they seem to love because they've kept him around the last 2 years, and
he's DeBose, one of them physical specimens.
Yeah. So, but Joe, anything else for this game, or are we going to just put a bow on this one for this week?
I think we're good, other than maybe the announcement that we'll go back to normal scheduling next week. The only reason that we're doing it this week is just because of the Monday night game, and this gives a little extra time to edit and all that stuff. So look for us to go back to normal Tuesdays and Thursdays starting again next week. And I mean, I could go on a hell of a rant right now, but I'm trying to keep it back just because it's not related to this game, but we'll see what happens after Sunday.
Sounds good. We'll put a pin in that one. But that's going to do it for us tonight on this opponent preview episode of the Hanna Packers Edition podcast. Please give us a follow. I'm at Kawano Mike on Twitter. Joe is at @Iowa_Joe86. The podcast is at @Ohana_Packers. Please go to our website, ohanapackers.org. We have streams of all episodes along with our blog posts on there. Please follow the podcast on your favorite podcast app. Give us a subscribe and a like if you're enjoying what you're hearing, and some feedback, comments. Either way, we want to hear the feedback. It does help us produce better content. The Packers are again trying to climb back out of the hole, get back to 500 again, and keep their playoff chances alive. It's another opportunity for a bounce back for Jordan Love and this offense. We'll see how they do against the Bucks on Sunday. It's another home game in Lambeau. And we say, go Pack, go, and aloha.